history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some incredible stories to be told. There are some men and women who have done incredible things for the sake of our freedom, but we'll never know unless we take the time to ask and listen to these stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired through these stories. And we're going to meet a gentleman today in Ogden, Utah, who's got quite a story. In fact, he's part of the story of the building we're sitting in, the George E. Wallen Veterans Home, a beautiful, brand-new-looking facility here. It's covered in snow at the moment, but a much different climate compared to where Bob Ramos grew up many, many moons ago in Georgetown, Texas. I bet you had some hot summers down there in Georgetown, Texas.
Incredibly hot. When summer came around, of course, at the time growing up in a small town, we just got used to that.
And I bet you got used to hard work, too. I mean, here you are growing up, one of five children. There are four of you brothers. You all served in the military, two in World War II, two in Korea. You served in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, as we're going to hear. I bet you guys were awfully protective of your sister.
It's kind of a custom, yes. We took care of her, make sure that keep the boys away from our sister. So she was a overly protected young child.
What do you remember about your childhood? What did you spend your time on?
I'll have to go back and tell you why I didn't have a formal education. There was five of us. My father worked on the railroad. He got sick at early age with stomach cancer, so he died age 37.
Wow. How old were you at that time?
10. Mm-hmm. So I was the oldest of five children.
You were the man of the house at 10.
Right. Wow. Automatically, that's a Mexican custom that the oldest will have to try to help provide for the rest of the family. So right after my father died, he left mom a $300 insurance policy. So with that $300 at that time, 1935 in Georgetown, she bought a small house. It reminded me of a mobile home now, but this wasn't a mobile home. In fact, blacks and Mexicans lived in this region because of segregation.
And for folks who don't know, Georgetown is real close to Austin. They might not associate that part of Texas with segregation, but that's what you knew.
Oh, yeah. Something that we grew up with. So when my father was working, I attended school. But when my father died, I was like in the third grade. And after he passed away, my mother found out she couldn't provide for the rest of the kids. And she looked at me and said, "You're going to have to go to work."
At 10 years old?
At 10 years old.
What kind of work did you find?
Delivering newspapers, mowing lawns. Luckily, there was a small neighborhood store in Georgetown owned by a gentleman by the name of John Edgar Glenn. And I says, "Could you hire me if I came in, sweep the store, and kept the shelves stocked?" He says, "Okay. Man, you can start by taking the raw potatoes out and sweeping the store, keeping it clean." Yeah, okay. 10 cents an hour. Usually 8 hours, that's 80 cents, but he gave me a dollar. to a 10-year-old all the money in the world. So anyway, this thing started out beautifully. Like I said, I had very little school. I read pretty good, delivered newspapers. Afterwards, I would read. The only way to learn the sentence, if there were words I didn't understand, I talked to a friend of mine, and it's easy. Get your dictionary. That red book over there must be 50 years old. That has been a very close item in my life.
And I hear you getting emotional about that.
Yep.
That dictionary is your lifeline. That's how you educated yourself.
Right. But at that time, I found it easy. I didn't have to go to a structured school to learn. But I had to find a way to educate myself. So a dictionary was a big help. Anyway, after working a few weeks in the store, Mr. Glenn told me, tell your mother to come to the store once a week and take whatever she needs to feed the family at home.
Wow.
Free of charge. You just keep on working. You're doing a good job. Well, that was a big wow kind of thing, to feed the whole family.
Yeah, when you're feeding mom and five growing kids.
Six people.
Yeah.
In the meantime, then he taught me to check out a customer. No computers.
Yeah.
All manual. If the customer got potato, sugar, coffee, milk, bread, eggs, put each item, pencil, no piece of paper, add it up. Here is the map, and I found out that you can't live without map in your life.
That's a good point.
You use it sometimes without even thinking, okay, it's going to take 15 minutes from there to here. Math. Be here at a certain time. Math. A certain time for this interview. Math. 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 But I found out that I liked it. So at the time, everything was manual. Pencil and paper. Add up, divide, multiply, so forth. It worked out. So a few dollars a day, a few dollars a week, and then the war started in 1941.
So you were 16 at the time. Were you still working at Mr. Glenn's store there?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Delivering Western Union telegrams, anything to make a nickel, a dime, a quarter, and that added it up.
Yeah.
Take home to mom.
And I want to ask you about December 7th, but just as you describe your experience, and no, you didn't have the formal education in the schoolhouse, but you're getting language from the newspapers you're delivering and the dictionary to cross-check things. You're getting math by working at the grocery store, all kinds of life lessons you're learning too. And even though you lost your father when you were 10, it sure sounds like the owner of this grocery store, Mr. Glenn, in many ways became a second father to you.
Exactly. And I think he pictured this. Mom would tell me, be kind to people. Help every chance you get. Help others. If you see, and especially women, the elderly, always keep that in mind. If you see somebody needing help, just walk up to him. Let me help you. So it became kind of a flag bearer sort of thing.
Became your identity, the guy who would help people.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever stopped to think how different your life would have been if Mr. Glenn had said, nah, kid, I don't need your help?
Yeah, I don't know where in life I would have landed, but I was determined to help mom and the family. Okay, she bought the house, but we had to pay for electricity. We had, Paul, a 15-amp bulb in the front room hanging from the ceiling. And there was only three rooms, living room, kitchen, dining combination, small room, and a bedroom.
And there were six of you. What were your sleeping arrangements?
So Mom, Lucy on the floor in the living room, and there's four boys in the back bedroom. The two youngest on bed, the two eldest on the floor. Johnny and I slept on the floor.
Until you went into the Army. Some guys, the Army was tough life. For you, it was an upgrade in some of these living conditions.
A lifesaver.
A lifesaver.
For me.
Well, tell me about, I don't want to forget to get this story, because everybody seems to have a story of December 7th, 1941. Do you remember how you found out what happened?
I was delivering papers. But gradually, for 3-4 months, the newspapers were carrying stories of it's coming because of the things the Japanese were doing on the Germans in Europe. Mm-hmm. They were gobbling up Poland, Czechoslovakia, Austria, and so forth. So I would read this in the paper. Usually there was a small sketch of a map of that region, you know, read, that things are not good.
So the irony here is, because you were delivering these papers every day and reading these papers every day, you were probably a whole lot more in tune with world events than all those kids in the schoolhouse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't a big surprise to you that the Japanese attacked?
No, because like I said, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure this thing out.
You were growing up in a hurry, I'm sure, because you had to.
Paul had joined a crew that came from Georgetown to Utah, thinning beets.
Harvesting the sugar beets?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Hard work, miserable. But the pay compared to the store was 3, 4, 5 times more money-wise.
How old were you when you were doing that?
15, probably 16. Because after the war was declared and the Selective Service Act was passed, which started this draft, I was in Montana, thinning beets. So I registered in Montana. I got drafted, so I hurried home. Told Mom, because Mom also was thinking they're going to take my number one helper kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she started saying, I don't think that you're going to pass the exam. I said, Mom, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm going to pass the exam. Uh-huh. And I want to go. What? Don't you know what you're saying? This is war and they're killing people. I said, Mom, I know that. But I have all my friends that are doing it. Mm. I wouldn't do it. Says, well, they're going to find something wrong with you and you will fail the exam. So that day came, I went to San Antonio. I passed the exam and I knew that Mom was going to help out her time with this. So I came home. I says, guess what? You failed it. I said, no, I passed it. And she started crying.
She started crying.
So anyway, Paul, I reported San Antonio. I got issued all the stuff. And they put us on a bus. And I says, where are we going? I says, well, we can't talk about it. It's all secret. You got to learn this. Yep, you can't talk about this. You can't talk about that. We found ourselves Rockford, Illinois, Army basic to become a field combat medic.
And you're 18 years old?
I'm 18, Paul, and no education. And I'm going to learn the pressure points, the wounds, how to fix a wound in the stomach, in the head, or leg, limb. I don't have that education. But again, I looked around, there's other kids that are also wondering if we can do this. Mm-hmm. So I don't find myself I selected the Southerners. We'll have the same problem. We graduated. We learned all of those terms. 18 weeks of basic cram, 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 cram. Day, night, weekend, holidays. But we'd done it. I didn't. So they kept me at Camp Grant for one training cycle. This is going to sound like bragging, but I was such a good soldier that they kept me as a helper to my staff sergeant or trainer. But I'm used to know later they're going to put you in the list. So, sure enough, all of a sudden, because of the war in Europe, they needed more frontline troops.
When you're in training there at Camp Grant, did they know you'd never gone to high school?
Oh, yeah.
They knew. They
oh,
knew.
Yeah.
But
oh,
you did
yeah.
such a good job, they said, we want to keep this guy around to help train other people.
Because he tries. He tries and excels. He's a quick learner.
So that saved you from going overseas earlier.
Uh-huh.
But then, because of something that they did to mark your birthday, I mean, wasn't it your 19th birthday that this big invasion happens, June 6, 1944?
Yeah.
And because of everything that followed, now they needed more people over there.
Right.
Especially once the bulge hit.
Right.
Then they really needed people. So they say, sorry, you're not going to be a medic anymore.
Right.
All right.
We're going to teach you how to shoot a rifle, pistol, hand grenade, everything that an infantryman is supposed to know. So they sent me to Camp Maxie, Texas, Paris, Texas, for 4 weeks. And then from there, they sent me to Fort Lewis, Washington. Then from there, overseas.
And we'll follow Bob overseas when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.